broadcast on my fast speaker from the heart of the Upper Empire.
Welcome to the podcast. This is episode 3. It's me and Chris here. It's Skaven, Dan and Rageaholic from the forum. If you can't remember who we are, you should really know by now.
You would think
last
so.
Last time we had a episode with Chris and Matt going over the Dark Elves and how dirty they are.
And they are very dirty.
Filth personified, but they are Dark Elves.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It fits. So, what do you want to start with?
I want to start with, what have you been up to since we last recorded?
What have I been up to since we last recorded? Well, I've been to the Tribute Outpost after... Tribute Tournament Practice without any sleep because I got a bit giddy and went on StarCraft all night. But yeah, that seemed to work in my favour. I woke up with a vengeance at 10 a.m. with a coffee and slaughtered some poor ogre army. You were actually doing pretty well to start with, to be honest, but yeah, it's Warriors of Chaos. They're about as filthy as Dark Elves. So there you go.
Yeah, Warriors are, I don't know, the bad matchup for ogres. Have run into middle and smash it, but Warriors smash it a little bit better, I guess.
Well, it was actually doing pretty good to start with, but then I was like, well, I'll just run my Demon Prince into your big bunker. And it was his inch for a change, so I was like, well, I'll just cast Treason so you can use lowest leadership with no reroll.
Oh, that's no fun.
And I won by one. Guess what happened?
He ran away and you ran him down.
Yeah. It was turn 5, though.
Ah, oh, well, that's so, not so bad.
He did well to last that long with Yogs. It was a good chap. It was all right. And then we had a warrior off. He'd... pretty much what I had, but he had Tzinch block of well, you don't want to die, we've got the Tzinch banner that halves the strength of your attacks at range and such that it was filthy. Mathematically everything was in my favour because all my characters were better equipped, all my units were better, but the dice just betrayed me. Failing a 3 at ward when you reroll your 1s to a hell cannon and then just losing a character straight away, that was just painful.
Yeah, and, that's no fun.
My L cannon beat the shit out of his skull crushers though, so that was humorous to see that happening.
That's pretty lucky, and a skull crusher, should skull crushers beat a
skull,
I think they
skull
should,
crushers they're only really, really good on charge. After charge, L cannon's unbreakable.
Yeah, so strength 6 as well, so you're taking them to a 4 up. Yeah, I suppose you're in a pretty good chance. No stomp, though. It always seems to be stomp that does it with hell cannons.
Yeah, well, that's the one, isn't it? But no, we had a Demon Prince off, and I should have won because I had better to hit, better save, and I still fucked it up. So there you go. Sometimes the dice just turn on you.
They do. What did you get for your last game?
Demons. Fluffy demons. It were all Nurgle, except that unit, Tzinch, and that cannon, Akorn.
Oh, so, yeah, usual fluffy Nurgle demons.
Fluffy demons.
Fluffy Nurgle demons. It's a Nurgle army. What's that skull cannon? It's a Nurgle skull cannon.
I probably screwed this up a bit as well, but I did have a bit of cheese in this one. Because my unkillable Disc Rider died the previous game, in this game he decided to take out almost single-handedly the big unit of beasts. I ran him in and every turn he killed a beast.
That's pretty good going. Those little bastards are pretty tough.
It's mathematically impossible. But I managed it. And it was just like, I ran him in, the skull crushers were supposed to go in and a chariot was supposed to go in. He made it, the chariot made it, the skull crushers failed.
Oops.
The chariot bounced. He went, I'm a BSB, I'm not going nowhere. So we hung in there. The chariot rallied, charged back in. The skull crushers failed again. Really peed me off. But in the end, the chariot and the disc rider died. And then the skull crushers went, oh, actually, we better do something. So in the last turn, they ran in against one beast of Nurgle and just ripped it to bits and went, I win combat by 6. Oh.
Nice.
I did something pretty filthy down the other flank as well. I got the Demon Prince into the Rotflies, killed the Rotflies, took them off, and I cast Glean Magic on his wizard, knowing that I was stealing his only spell that wasn't a magic missile. Then I ran my demon prince into the unit with all the magic missiles. That's it. No more magic phase for you, mate.
Nice.
I thought that was a particularly filthy manoeuvre.
That is nasty.
And the rest of it was just posturing. But I only got an 11.9 out of that because...
It's tough, aren't they? They take a lot of grinding out, some of them Nurgle units.
Yeah, but I could have charged one on turn two, and if I had have done, I'd have killed it.
If you had failed to charge, anyway.
Well, no, the Demon Prince would have hacked one up on his own. And that would have killed a lot of points. Plus, no one would have been able to try and target my Demon Prince. Not that anyone was going to. He got lucky. He rolled a Snake Eyes, one of the combat reses, and his champion that was in the challenge with the Demon Prince came back to life. And I was like, yeah, son of a bitch. So it was fun. It was a different comp pack. Didn't particularly like the matchups. I don't particularly rate ogres.
Ogres were nice, but they're just warriors just seem to outdo them. Like, I mean, I guess only average ogres have got now is they've got cannons that...
Warriors outdo them, now dark elves outdo them, high elves outdo them. There's no moisture that doesn't outdo ogres.
Yeah, I suppose there is that. Unless they're a Hellheart, fucking hate that thing.
Yeah, my friend took the Hellheart, Phil. Oh, we've got to call him Filth now, because he owns dark elves for the last 10 years. And he's always moaned about how crap they are, so now they are Filth, so he's Filth now.
I must admit, I put my dark elves away when 4th edition dark elf book came out, because they were shit when new book came out. Well, when first book came out, and they may have to make a reappearance if they're as filthy as they look.
I don't mind, but they were going with the whole, we're balancing the armies off, making everything fairer. And they released the High Elves, and they released the Dark Elves. And for me, it's like a reenactment of what they did with the Tomb Kings and the Vampire Counts. You've got one army, which is super awesome, and the other army, which sucks ass.
Yeah, that does seem to be the case. They do very much look like they're going to outdo the High Elves. Have you seen the picture that's been going around on the internet with the magic missiles and the High Elves 2d6? Was it 2d6 strength 4, the Dark Elves 2d6 strength 5?
Yeah, we'll have to put that on the page.
It's so been around a while, but it's pretty entertaining.
It's true though, isn't it? Cause it's like, you've got 2d6 strength 4, I've got Warp Lightning, zap.
High Elves still get Phoenixes though. No Dark Elf Phoenixes, they have to make do with dragons and Pegasuses and...
Oh, whoa. No, yeah, they've got to make do with...
Hydras and Charybdises.
Yeah,
it's not all their way.
Yeah, we could bitch and moan about Dark Elves now, so all night, I imagine. But
and we probably will.
Moving along, what have you been up to then?
I've finally handed in my PhD thesis on last Monday, which has been kind of dragging at my time quite significantly, so I'm glad to have that out of the way. But I can't imagine anyone listening to a Warhammer podcast gives much of a shit about that, so hobby-wise, I've got a lot done, painting-wise, etc., up until this last week, but I went to the Blood and Glory tournament, the Bad Dice podcast, boo-hiss competition. They only get like 1,000 times more downloads than us, so totally in their league. But yeah, they organised that, and pretty good weekend. There were absolutely loads to do, so they kind of organised it. The whole idea behind it was that there'd be a lot to do, so they had a big championship, as they called it, like 2,400 point, 6-game, 2-day tournament. But they also, on the Friday, they ran a 1,200-point tournament, a 500-point tournament, and then Saturday night they ran a skirmish 100-point game. And I signed up for everything except the 1,200. And then on the way down, some prat had driven his truck off the M1, and he had properly driven it off, like off the motorway, into a ditch at the side, wanting the way at all. And they decided, best time to recover it, 5 o'clock on a Friday night. Let's shut two lanes of the M1, get the crane in and get this truck out of the ditch.
If we wait till 5, the classes is overtime.
Yeah, well, most likely. Why they couldn't have come back at 11 o'clock when the motorway were empty. So I think it was not kind of a nice idea. There were a lot to do, but I ended up getting there late. So I like when it walked in door and it was like, you're at 500, right, go play. And then, because I ended up leaving my car at venue, I was late on one of the mornings. So it just, the whole weekend were like, I basically was running from game to game. I did 14 games of Warhammer in 2 days, which it was a lot of fun, but pretty hard work. Some of it went all right, some of it went pretty badly. So 500-point tournament, I thought, 500 points, everybody will take a bit of a laugh list. It's just, you know, just for fun. So I took a Warlord, not a Warlitter, an Assassin, pretty much naked. Also take 10 Storm Vermin, 10 Night Runners, because I never run Night Runners, and I think 5 Gutter Runners. And I thought, you know, a bit of a laugh. First guy I played, playing Orcs and Goblins. Got 20 goblins, live with that, 20 night goblins, 5 wolf riders, a doom diver, 14 squigs, and a war boss on a giant spider with a frigging ruby ring. And it's just like, this is about the filthiest orc and goblin 500 point list you could possibly run. And yeah, the whole 500 point tournament went like that. I'd take like a fun, fluffy list expecting a laugh, and everyone else had taken filth going all out to win. So yeah. going in the last game, I were on bottom table going in the last game, but I knew prizes. They were calling them woolen spoons. So it's like a wooden spoon that someone, she usually does dice bags, a dice bag lady. She'd done like knitted covers for all these wooden spoons. So it's like a wooden spoon with a knitted wool cover with a little black bad dice tag on it, which are pretty cool. So I knew I won't come in anyway, so I played to lose in the last one. I got some guy with vampires, and I was like, how can I set this up to play to lose without looking like I'm playing to lose? So, I was well down at the bottom. I had 2 games where I tried, and then my last game, I like threw the game for the wooden spoon, which was quite entertaining. Then, we had quite a lot of beers on a Friday night. So I rocked up Saturday morning, draw were up. I had a pounding headache. I didn't think I'd had that much to drink, but I think it was a lack of sleep, a bit dehydrated, and I felt like there was something in my head trying to get out. First game, Russ Veal, one of England ETC players, with demons. That were a nice wake-up call. Probably best part of the game, the only reason I didn't get tabled, he had level 4 chicken, whatever they call it. What's the... Is he integrated demon? Lord of Change.
Lord of Change.
Yeah, he cascaded his Lord of Change, and nice. he pulled out a small win, but it could have been a lot worse. But yeah, I wasn't expecting to get one of country's top players for my first game.
You thought you'd come to a friendly tournament.
Yeah, well, I knew there were some good players. I think he went pretty easy on me, although it were. Where they ran it, they didn't just run it points, they ran it on like scenarios. So it were, you got so many points for winning scenario, and then there were extra points for, there were like quite a lot of painting scores, quite a lot of sportsmanship scores, and then there were, like I say, you got quite a lot of points for winning main objective, and then you got secondary objectives, or like break the fortitude, like win the game on VPs, and then tertiary objectives were like capture terrain pieces and stuff. So yeah,
you were actually at that, because I've read loads of reviews for that.
Yeah, there's been loads of reviews, so it's been up quite a lot. Yeah, I went to that one. It was a really good tournament. I think there were a few things I could have done better, a few things I could have done differently, but I think the fact that it was the first tournament, probably, you know, if they run it again next year, I think it'd probably be really good. I think it'd be well worth going to next year, because I think they probably did learn quite a lot. Yeah, it was really interesting, actually, because, I mean, every tournament of... No, I've been to one outpost that they ran scenarios, but they were bloody awful scenarios. But these were actually all well-thought-out, kind of reasonable scenarios. There were a couple of, I won't say scandals, but a couple of debatable ones. They had Watchtower, so there were a few people bitching about Watchtower because they didn't have right-sized unit of infantry to start in Tower, or they couldn't take the Tower. And then they have Blood and Glory as well, which is obviously, it's a really short game. There were, I can't remember, well, one of the other top players, he got against Ogres. He were right up on top tables, and first turn at game, he ran forward with his fire belly, popped the Hellheart, sucked his demon into warp, Yeah, rolled Cascade on his miscast, lost his general. Game over, first turn. That must have been quite entertaining. Yeah, it was fun. So it was nice to play some Warhammer that were a little bit different. Although most of them, if you just smashed your opponent off the table, then you were kind of going to win the game anyway. Played against another Skaven player. Turned his Greyseer into a rat, which was quite entertaining. He seemed to think it was less entertaining, but you know, you always do when it happens to you, don't you? What else I play? I got Dark Elves. That were a bit of a nightmare list. I'd rather play one of these new smashy, fighty Dark Elf lists. This guy had, it was like a shooting avoidance list, and he just spent the whole game saying, whatever your charge range is, plus half an inch away from that unit, and now I'm going to shoot with all my repeating crossbows. Right, next turn, right, I'll move around, kill that unit. I'm now 18 and a half inches away from your helper. I'm going to shoot it. So that were all right, but kind of frustrating game. But that's how it goes when you're playing the avoidance lists. Did have some fun games. I had a fun game with High Elves, because he had that was the Watchtower game that I got. And I got my giant clan rat unit in the Watchtower, and the only infantry I had were 10 archers who all got turned into rats. So he didn't go so well on that one. He just couldn't shift me out of the tower. Overall, I think I came 53rd or 54th. There seem to have been about three results lists out that I seem to have varied by one or two points in position out of about 80-odd players, so not the best I could have done, but certainly not the worst. But they were all uncomped. I thought it was quite interesting that they were all uncomped. So obviously, top tables were, I think out of top 10, I think 8 of them were Demons and Warriors, and then I think there were one Lizard and one, I can't remember what the other one was, but yeah, all Warriors and Demons at the top. But the top Skaven player with our filthy, disgusting rats in totally uncomped came 48th. So I think you've got to argue that maybe Skaven are not quite as filthy and broken as some people seem to think they are. But yeah, it was a really fun weekend. I really enjoyed it. I should have probably not had the time out from writing my thesis, but overall it were worth going to.
Screw the thesis. Gaming's for life.
Definitely, that's it. I won't be prattling about proteins forever, but I probably will be playing Warhammer for quite some time. What else have I been up to? So yeah, I did a little bit of painting for that. I think I painted up, I ran double seer, so I needed to paint a second grey seer, and I think I painted a new BSB as well. Another thing I've done, I've built myself a new gaming table. I've been doing this last week since I've handed in. All my free time has been spent building a 6x4 gaming table, to try and keep some of my crap under control. So I had a table before, but it didn't move, so my new one's got kind of storage space underneath. It's on casters, so I can shove it out of the way. So hopefully I'll get a little bit less marital hassle over my wargaming mess. Yeah, fingers crossed with that. But I thought it was quite good, actually, and I followed some instructions that someone had posted on the blog. But they weren't great instructions, so I'm thinking what I'm probably going to do for a video is I might do a kind of a video showing how it's put together and like an instructions list, just in case anybody's interested in doing one of their own, because I thought it were quite a nice little project, and it kind of tidies up my wargaming room like you wouldn't believe. So yeah, let us know. So we'll give you all feedback details at the end of the show, but let us know if that'd be something you're interested in seeing.
Yeah, I should probably do that, to be honest, because I've got like a 5x7 foot room, and it's just filled by Warhammer models. People go in and go like, "Oh my God, I've died and gone to heaven. This is what heaven would be for me: a room full of toy soldiers and 2 8x4 tables."
It kind of depends what you want to do, and you know whether you want to better reuse your room for other stuff as well, but. The idea behind it were, as well as the gaming surface, I've got like a big storage. So I've got a 6x4 storage space underneath that's about kind of 3 foot deep. So I've been buying plastic like underbed storage boxes for all my armies, and like another one for scenery and stuff. So it all packs away, out the way, and you're not tripping over it all the damn time, because I get sick of fucking seeing it. So God knows how Claire must be. She must be unbelievably fed up with it all.
Does she not tell you, Chris? Does she enhance the calm?
She's not bad, actually, because we have it in I have it in one room, and she, like, as long as I keep it in that one room, she just never opens the door. don't occasionally she'll walk past when doors open and be like, oh my god, what have you done? But yeah, no, she's usually pretty chilled about it, actually. I think she's a lot more understanding. If she had a hobby that took up so much room and made so much mess as mine does, I don't think I'd be right impressed.
Yeah, I imagine quite a lot of partners aren't that sympathetic. Women like to rule the roost when it comes to the house, so it's definitely a point of contention, really.
I've seen quite a lot of people who seem to be building like wargaming sheds. I think it tends to be
people get relegated to the shed as they get older.
Yeah, so do it in the shed, or do it in the garage, or do it somewhere that's like already a man area that they don't have to look at or deal with. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, it is a hobby. It really does take up a lot of room. I think, you know, short of needing a five-a-side football pitch or something, I don't think there'd be much you could do in the house that would take up as much room as Warhammer does, especially once you've collected 3 or 4 armies. So that's pretty much it for what I've been up to. So what else do we usually talk about? You've seen any interesting forum threads on the Under Empire?
Yeah, I'll give some brass to someone before we go on a rage quit. Dimco has done a blog in the Skaven and Painting Hobby section. What I like about this the most, as sad as it sounds, is he's done like a photo box for all his models, and it's just lined with kitchen foil.
Okay.
It's actually pretty good because it doesn't distract you from looking at stuff. You're focused directly on them. But yeah, he's got quite a good start to an army blog there. He's got 2 pages, and he's got some fantastic trays. I don't know where he got the trays from.
They're like textured ones.
Curved up at the end.
Right.
So it's like he's ordered metal trays from somewhere. They look familiar, but I can't.
Oh, right. I think I know what you mean. I haven't seen the pictures, but I think I can imagine what you mean. So I guess when I go and have a look, I'll find out whether or not my imagination's right.
He's got a very strong pebble-heavy basing technique, but it is kind of awesome. It's just like lots of pebbles and sand, but he's painted it and obviously dry brushed it from the looks of it, so it looks pretty solid. And it's on all his bases, so it's pretty consistent. It's got a bit of envy. I've never got the time to do anything with my models. I'm too busy being a nerd.
Come on, get them painted, man. You've got no excuse. You do a Warhammer podcast, you've got no excuse not to be spending time painting
your
models.
And in between this, I've got to write a dissertation, design an e-commerce website, work for myself, not rage quit my life.
You need more life hobby balance, clearly.
I need more fucking hours in a day is where I can't eat.
I think we all need
or
that.
Just a coffee IV drip, that might do it.
Well, what I've been doing, my painting is, I don't know whether this sort of thing that might work out for you, I've been trying to get a bit done in the morning. So I'm kind of, you know, not, because I mean, you know, it's like an evening, you come home from work, you're knackered, you've got heavy tea, but so normally in the morning I kind of get up and it takes me an hour to be like ready. To get ready to get out of the house, I've got to have a coffee, I've got to have some breakfast, I want to watch a bit of breakfast television, all that crap. So I've started putting my painting stuff on a tray, so I just take through breakfast time, just do like half an hour on a couple of models, just get a couple of bits done. I've been quite enjoying doing that rather than watching bloody BBC, was it BBC Today that I always watch, and talk about some whatever latest shit that's going on in the world is. Quite nice to zone out for half an hour and paint some rat ogres.
That wouldn't really work for me. I stay 3 a.m. What I need is some like high powered good lighting so that I can stay up till 3 a.m. and paint. That's what I need.
Oh well, you definitely need a good painting light. That's I used to be alright with it when I were, you know, kind of 18 or 20, I got away with it. Now I'm well into my 30s. If the light's not right, I just can't do it. I've got to have my painting light. So I've just got an old IKEA one, but it's works for me. You can bring it closer and closer and closer as your eyes get more and more tired. But yeah, that might be I don't know if it might be something you want to talk about now or something we could talk about in another section. The taking pictures of your models, because I know you're pretty into your photography, but I think there are quite a lot of mistakes that people tend to make when they're doing pictures of the models. Yeah, I might be interested to have a more professional photographer's opinion on how to do decent ones rather than the kind of badly lit turn on the kitchen table ones that you usually see.
Well, plenty of guides on the Under Empire. This is the thing that annoys me about badly done model photography, because it's like all you got to do is put it in Google and it's right there. So yeah, it's like this guy, you know, Damco, he's got the right idea. He's set up like a 2-foot by 2-foot box lined in silver foil. Obviously, he's using the silver foil as a reflector for the light, which is a good idea. He's not using direct flash. And then to avoid it from actually looking like it's being blasted by the, like, reflections, he's put some kind of plastic cup underneath his unit. So it's holding it up, because to start with, my eyes
right,
were like...
Right, so is it in like a foil line box, and then he puts his models in that?
Basically, it's a box, but you don't have the top and the side you're stood at.
Right, yeah, I think I see what you mean.
Yeah, because that's how you should do a good light box. You don't have the top and the side you're stood at, but the rest of it's lined. Usually people just line it white or paint it white or spray it white.
You see, I hate that. I always think that kind of ruins the models. You see loads of people who do them on either white or black. When your camera does its like auto level adjusting thing, it looks at the white background and goes, okay, I need to adjust it so that white background is right. And you kind of end up, it never works out. It kind of ends up like washing out all your shadows in your model. Or people don't have a black background, they have opposite problem that kind of the light areas are miles off the scale. That's kind of the one that always bugs me. I always think like a neutral background, like a grey or a blue, or just something that's not right at one extreme or the other, always seems to make a lot more sense to me.
Grey is the ideal colour. From a photography perspective, grey scale is the daddy of colour balance. So if you can, you should have a grey background. It's not easy to do though. It's hard to get something that's a true grey.
I suppose. I guess you've got to kind of go out and buy a piece of material specifically.
Yeah, well, when I redecorated the studio at work, I had to specifically go to the stupid paint manufacturers and go, make me a neutral grey, because they didn't sell it.
Right.
So I had to pay my fucking soul for a tin of paint to do a room. But it does the job, because no one looks at the background, look at the people in the photos, which is what you're after. It's not in your face, like I said, black and white are so contrasting, but grey, everyone just ignores grey because it's in the middle.
Yeah. So what about like a piece of grey cardboard or something? You think that would be worthwhile for people to, as like a quick tip, instead of, because what everyone seems to do is grab a piece of paper off the printer. You see loads that are like curved sheet of paper
that's been sellotaped down.
Yeah.
I just don't know where you'd buy grey card is the thing.
You must be able to get it in. I know when I go, there's a model shop that I go in for my non-GW modelling supplies, and they sell sheets of card in every... I've never really looked, but they have pink and green and yellow and red. They must do a grey. So yeah, so that's my top tip, is get yourself a piece of grey card and take a picture of your models against that, preferably under natural lighting.
Yeah, if you can, grey is the colour to go for. A neutral grey is bang on, because it's not distracting or anything like that, and you should get a good colour balance against it. And it's obvious if your colour balance is off against grey. Don't do direct flash. If you're going to do flash, do it at like 140 degrees, because you shouldn't need to direct flash. You're not in a cave, you know. Presumably you're in a house somewhere. So light should be at least okay when you start off. And if you want high resolution, use a low ISO and a low f-stop. But
that's probably
again,
a bit too technical. I think a
lot
of people
to your camera and how much a geek you are.
But yeah, I think the background and the lighting, I think natural light's really important as well. A lot of people do them on phone cameras, and basically, obviously, you're never going to have an angled flash that you can use and all this sort of thing, but...
Yeah. Just but you can just turn your flash off and you can get the right natural light. Yeah. Or you could use your model lamp. If you angled that right to light it right, and then you could take it with your camera.
Maybe I just don't have right setup, but I never seem to be able to get light. Well, you've tried it with my model lamp, and I either have it in front of them and it's a massive glare just like it is when you take too much flash. You can try and do it above or behind, and all you get is shadows. But I'm convinced with natural light. we're getting into winter, so I might have
to come around and show you how to set it up.
Show me how to do it. Yeah, well, that's good for me. I'd love to be able to take some better pictures. I don't think mine are bad, but I definitely think there's room for improvement. But it's just because loads of people put pictures up, and you do occasionally look at one and think, I'd love to actually see that model. You know, because obviously when you post it on the internet, what everyone sees is your photography of that model. And people say, oh, it looks loads better in real life. So, well, take a better picture, because I'd love to see it.
Yeah. Well, that is the penultimate thing, isn't it? It's ifs, buts, and maybes of whether it is as good as people say, because everyone always says things like that. And, you know, well, I think down their own photos.
The lighting thing's always quite interesting, because, I mean, I've painted models inside under unnatural light, and they looked amazing, and you take them outside, or, you know, take them by the window, and you're like, oh, that looked great, and like, now it looks terrible. I mean, you do kind of have the argument that you're always playing in some dingy room with the lights on, so it's not the end of the world. But yeah, it is amazing how much of a difference it makes, even not just for the photography, just for the painting and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just understanding all your different shades and your player washes and other things, it's like, it's not that I care, it's just having the fucking time. So it's, and you'll have to come see my gaming room sometime, because you'll just walk in and go, Jesus Christ, it's the legion of grey models.
Oh, you don't paint them? God, that drives me mad. Well, I'm running out of stuff to paint, so there might be an offer to paint a few for you. Once I'm done with Skaven, and I'm out of a job now, so I'm not getting paid. So I'll either end up with a paint stripper to start repainting the stuff I've already done, or I might end up being desperate for need something.
Well, I've got a wide selection of stuff you to choose from. This is Rage's painting hobbies. He's available at £27,000 an hour. Plus tips.
Oh, we're looking into the... somebody were on about the... You know, what was the bundle for the Adeptus Astartes, the full Space Marine chapter bundle. And I kind of worked out how long it'd take me and what I'd want. So if you want to buy the Adeptus Astartes, $10,000, and I'll paint it for you, if you want to buy the whole chapter.
How long would that take?
I can probably have it done in 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah, I reckon.
And divorced in 6?
Nah, come on. Don't have a job, 8 hours a day, bang through it in definitely no more than 3 months. Space Marines are easy. Any idiot can paint Space Marines.
Ooh, careful, you're offending us key listeners.
Yeah, because they all paint so many Space Marines. Tell you what, if you collect Space Marines and you're offended that I'll tell you any idiot can paint Space Marines, go listen to a 40k podcast. We don't need your type.
If you like 40k, just fuck off.
See, I was trying to be slightly less offensive than that.
Well, I thought I'd top you.
That's fair enough.
I see your insult and I raise you a Skaven Dan. Right, anyway, let's divulge from rambling about models.
But, yeah, I think so.
I do like that post. I just think it's good to see something with a silver background, because it's different to the usual, hey, it's all white and black.
Yeah, no, it's good. I always like to see different stuff. I vaguely remember the thread now. Now you've mentioned the silver foil. So yeah, what have I seen? I haven't had that much time to be on the Under Empire that much. There was quite an interesting thread that's apparently caused all sorts of ramifications. There's a GW Army book pricing thread.
Is there now?
So it kind of started off with the usual, you know, because the new Army books are all £30 each, and I do kind of see where the rage comes from, that the new Army books are all £30 each. The softbacks were like £17.50 or something. It is getting way out of hand about the charging for the Army books.
I don't think it's that. The new Army books are nice quality, though. It's not like they're skimped and it's crap, and that's why everyone's raging. I tell you, this is what annoys me, right? I started this in a topic. I put new Dark Elves throughout. Yay, new Dark Elves. And every time I post about a new release, some fucking twat feels the compulsive need to go on and go, oh, but the prices have gone up. like they're ever going to release something and the price is going to go down.
Moaning about the prices that Games Workshop charge is just as much a part of painting the hobby as painting the models is, or rolling the dice and pushing the models about is. It's absolutely an integral part of the Games Workshop hobby is moaning about the prices, because I've been doing it since kind of the mid-80s, and we used to bitch about it. Well, $1.99 for three orcs. it's gone on forever, and it will go on forever. I mean, I think a lot of the issue at the moment is Games Workshop are trying to kind of put it across as a premium product. You know, they're trying to really up their image. They're trying to get rid of all the online discount in, and they kind of do like a Rolex. You know, you're not allowed to discount our product because it detracts from the value. But a lot of people who play are school kids and students who don't have a lot of money. And I see where the rage comes from. It's like, you look at the new Witch Elves and say, all right, I want a unit of 50 Witch Elves. And then you sit down and work out what that costs you. And I can see why you get angry with it. But yeah, I don't know. So the new army books are a lot nicer. I do think 30 quid is pushing it a little bit. But then you can get 20% off. So 24 quid, I think, starts to be a lot more reasonable if you kind of go shop around online for them.
Actually, Dark Spheres offered 25% off. So that is pretty awesome.
That's pretty good. Should probably mention the Outpost as well. They usually do, they always do 10% off. And then usually on releases, they'll do like another 10%. So you get, it's 10% plus 10%, but you don't get 20%. So you end up getting that little bit more because it comes off twice. So I think you get like 22% off or something with them. So, because I want to hit up Chris for some sponsorship for the podcast, you see, so I want to get the Outpost mentioned.
Is that what it is? Okay. you should have mentioned before we started the show that we're supposed to big up the Outpost and how awesome.
Well,
with their
just
aircon, big electronic timer.
I've only just thought of it. The other thing I should big up the Outpost for is they had a Facebook competition where if you share this picture of the new Dark Elf cover, and he had to answer a question, but it were a retardedly easy one. Who do the Dark Elves hate? Which other race do the Dark Elves hate? I had to do a lot of Google searching, but I kind of figured it out eventually. It was High Elves, apparently. I don't know if, I kind of looked in my old Dark Elf book and worked it out. But, so if you shared it and blah, 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 they were going to pick one name at random for a new Dark Elf book. So cheers for a new Dark Elf book, guys. Oh yeah, on to the thread. So yeah, we had quite an interesting, it started off, you know, a bit of moaning about the prices, but yeah, and we got onto a kind of a piracy theme, and I just thought it was really interesting. I mean, the thread ended up getting locked, there were calamities amongst the mods and all sorts, but I don't really want to get into that. But what I thought were really interesting is kind of the massively differing opinions you get. You get a few people who kind of, I mean, my opinion with the whole piracy thing for the army books and downloading the PDFs, I've bought the army book for every army that I play. I've bought the army book for some armies that I'm thinking about playing. And I've got the PDFs for all the other army books. And, you know, they say, oh, the argument of lost sales is rubbish, you would have bought it. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't have bought it. I do, you know, I go to a lot of tournaments, and you need to know what all the other armies do. Now, in an ideal world, I would buy every army book. But it's, what, 30 quid each and there's 16 armies? I think I'll just work out it was 410 quid. No, I don't think that would. But it's a lot of money to buy all the army books. And I just don't think it's reasonable to buy them all. Basically, they need some, if they don't want people to download ones just to have a look and see what the rules for new models are, they need to come up with a better system.
If you're including Chaos Dwarfs, it is £495.
Yeah, I think that's excessive. 500 quid just for the books, and then, you know, that's more than it costs for your army. You probably buy a new army for 200 or 300 quid.
Oh, not anymore.
Well, you know, but I think when it's more for the rule books than it is for the armies, then I do think there's a problem. Now, whether they could get around it by having, you know, some of the rumours for 9th that there's going to be like a mini army book that kind of gives you a flavour of all the rules. Yeah, snore. I don't know, like I say. I just thought that I like the difference of opinions that kind of, and that my opinion is, you know, yeah, all right, I acknowledge that piracy is legally wrong, and I can see the argument that it's morally wrong, but you do the opposing viewpoint that absolutely, if you're a pirate, you're a thief, and if you come right out of my house, I'm going to lock my models up if you're a pirate, because you can't be trusted. That's just way over the top. And yeah, so it was a really interesting thread. So in the end, it got locked, and it kind of lost its edge a little bit, but I just thought there was a really interesting discussion going on there about piracy. Yeah, I'd love to hear your opinions on piracy. So if you want to catch us on, don't put it on the Under Empire, but if you want to catch us on Twitter or on Facebook and tell us what you think about army book prices and piracy of army books, then I'd be really interested to hear it. So,
Well, we'll have our own community site up pretty soon anyway, so if there's any controversial topics, you can always just put it on there in the future.
I don't want to be seen as poaching members, but yeah.
We're not poaching.
Leave them, come see us. But
if people feel uncomfortable posting it there, they can always send it directly to us, can't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm quite happy to put a disclaimer. If we set up a forum, I'm quite happy to put on a disclaimer saying the opinions posted here are the views of the people who post them, and it's nothing to do with me.
Just put Seascaven Dan for a bollocking. I think we should end that on this song. Hang on a second.
Do what you want, cause a pirate is free. You are a pirate. Your heart fitted in deep. Being a pirate is a right to thief. Do what you want, cause a pirate is free. You are a pirate. You are a pirate. We got us a map to lead us to a hidden box that's all locked up with locks and buried deep away. We'll dig up the box. We know it's full of precious booty. Bust open the locks and then we'll say hooray.
Oh, welcome back, guys. So I had a couple of listener questions, feedbacky type things that we kind of want to go over. So the idea of Rat Stars has come up on the Under Empire, and we kind of just want to have a little bit of a chat about what the hell's a Rat Star, what do I do with it, how do I make one, why do I want one, etc. So yeah, so the basic idea behind it is it's pretty much as it sounds, Skaven Death Star. So when we talked about the ETC lists a couple of episodes ago, one of the lists that we pulled out for that we thought were interesting were Craig Johnson's Skaven list. And we just kind of liked it because it didn't have a Grey Seer and it were a little bit different. But what he had were a Warlord with a Fell Blade, two other Warlords, one and a Warlitter, and then his general kind of on foot. He's got three different chieftains, three different engineers and an assassin in there. And two big units of Storm Vermin. So basically the idea behind it is, obviously if you have all those characters in one unit, three different Warlords and all those chieftains, you're going to have a fairly hard hitting unit anyway. But it's kind of halfway between a Death Star that you would do with a kind of a Vampire Count's army, where you throw the really killy vampires in, because we can't really make characters that killy. And it's a little bit of the idea that you go with like the Goblin Death Star, where you'd kind of take 40 goblins and then stick 5 Night Goblin heroes at the front, so you've got kind of 5 cheap characters who kind of throw out a bit more damage than average, and are a little bit tough to take down. But basically, it's all about using the different initiative steps to get the Fellblade guy into combat. So your Fellblade, your Warlord's initiative 7, I think. So he probably will be going before most people, but obviously there's the odd thing, like Demon Princes are higher initiative, or you might have an Always Strikes First Vampire who'll be going first. So the idea is to, you have to have 2 characters in the front rank, so you probably put 2 chieftains in the front rank, and then make up your other 3 front rank slots with your command models, so your standard bearer, your musician, and your champion. And then when you start the combat, you have to have a really good think about what they've got, what you've got, and who you're going to make way with. So because you've left 3 slots open, you can get your Fellblade Warlord pretty much into any of those 3 front slots, so he can pretty much fight anyone who's in combat with your unit. So if he's going first and he's going up against something that he really wants to take a swing at, say like a Great Unclean one who's really tough but he's got a naff initiative, you make way with your Fellblade guy, go in with the Fellblade, hopefully jobs are good. But if you're up against someone who, like an Always Strikes First Vampire Lord, say, you make way with 2 more chieftains, or 3 more chieftains, or probably 2 more chieftains, and leave your champion at the front. So you've got front rank of characters, so he's got to go for a character. So he attacks one or more of your characters, almost certainly kills one, but this is right at the start of the combat on his Always Strikes first step. So when you lose a character, you've obviously got to replace him, and you can replace him with another character. So he kills a chiefdom, then you bring your Fellblade Warlord forward, the really killy guy who could take him out before he got to swing's gone, and you get your go again with the Fellblade, so hopefully you take out the Vamp Lord without him having had a chance to have a go at you first. So I'm really interested to try it, actually. I was kind of hoping to get a game in during last week before we recorded this to give it a practice. I'm not entirely convinced that it's going to be the best tactic. I think there are probably ways around it. Certainly, if they've got sort of anti-heroes and you've got something like 8 characters in one unit, then you are stuffed big time because you're going to end up with a Vamp Lord with 13 attacks at strength 10.
Yeah, there are certain ways around it, but there is also a slight point. You have to decide at some point whether it's worthwhile for them to make contact and the combat to go ahead, or you want to use one of those cheap characters as a redirect, take him out of the unit, put him at a duff angle, because especially against monstrous cavalry, if you can get your unit into the flank of MCAV that have got a charge usually to do something, then you know you can really go to town. If you've got an entire rank against a flank or MCAV and you've got a guy with a Fellblade as well, you can go to town.
Well, even if you don't have the whole rank, I mean, you've got a, especially got an assassin, Weeping Blade, Potion of Strength guy, if you've got a Fellblade and a Weeping Blade, Potion of Strength assassin, you're going to have a unit of about 8 monstrous cav to have anybody left standing at the end of the combat.
Yeah.
You know, there are two things that will absolutely mince through monstrous cav. I'm not saying everybody should go out and do it, but we had a couple of questions about how it worked, so that's kind of how it works. I mean, the other nice thing, the kind of list that we did look at, I mean, you can go look up our old episode or go look up the ETC lists, but it has 2 Storm Vermin units. So obviously you kind of make one of the Storm Vermin units your Death Star, but obviously you've got the option, depending on who you're playing, whether you want to keep everyone in that unit. Then if that unit gets pounded on with shooting, obviously you can jump all your characters into the other unit. Or, you know, again, depending on who you're fighting, you've still got the option, since you deploy your characters last, they don't know which of the Storm Vermin units is going to be your Death Star, so it just makes it a little bit more difficult for them to block it up. So yeah, I think there's a few good options, probably worth a go. Not convinced it's not going to win you every game. But
it doesn't even need to be a Storm Vermin unit. If you've got enough characters to fill the first rank, the majority of your characters is strength 4 anyway.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, so, put them in a clan unit,
supporting attacks at strength 3 as opposed to strength 4 is not much difference. You know, when I first started playing with 8th edition Skaven, one of my thoughts was, why the hell would you take Storm Vermin when you can take 5 chieftains on the front rank?
Yeah, I must admit that's been because I've never really thought of it with Stormburn. I've been doing it with my Orcs and Goblins. You know, you take a unit of Night Goblins, and the Night Goblin character with a great weapon is 34 points. So for 160 some points, you can have an entire front rank of 3 attack great weapon guys, strength 6. But you can certainly do chieftains. It seems kind of a shame to give chieftains great weapons because of the good initiative, but you can certainly give them halberds and get, you know, 15 strength 5 attacks out of the front rank of a clanrite unit, and that costs you a couple of hundred points. It's, yeah, certainly an option worth looking at.
Yeah, well, it's like you say, it's if it's worth taking that moment, you really have to practice and get used to the downfalls and upfalls of it. Like, the sort of anti-heroes is just... I run my big Vamp Lord with the sword of anti-heroes because I think you're insane not to, because the only way he's in any surreal danger is if he's up against multiple characters. So yeah, if you run him into that unit, it doesn't take much to take him to strength 10. Attacks.
Yeah,
10.
The thing is, I mean, I suppose he gets a lot of attacks, but then again, they're all at the same initiative step. So he can only take out the 3 guys he's in contact with.
Yes, but that's... It depends how many guys you can afford to lose. Most night buses have 2 vampires in.
Yeah, this is true. This is very true.
So
yeah, it's probably... I mean, like I say, it's not... It's the same with any... I mean, it's the same with any net list, really. If you say, I'm going to run this and I'm going to go out and win every game, then it's probably not going to work. You've still got to practice with it. You've still got to really know what you're doing with it. But yeah, it's just a nice option. Other than, I mean, the other Skaven Death Star that I used to run was the Bell Assassin. You know, kind of minimise the attacks back, and that works quite well. But then, you know, you don't necessarily always want to take a Screaming Bell. So, I just think it's a nice different option. So yeah, so I think, did you have one or something about Wither or Drain Magic or something that we were gonna?
Yeah, if we must. Right, there's a bunch of pedantic word monkeys that like arguing about stuff, and it's come up quite a bit that Drain Magic should, in theory, work against Wither, Plague of Rust, and various other spells which have permanent effect. My answer to this is no, because exactly the same. That is going to turn back on his bodyguard. It don't happen. And it don't happen because once it happens, it's done. Right? Because if you start on that line, then if that works, then oh, you killed three people with fireball, drain magic, they're back alive again. You know, it's that kind
there's
of
no,
argument.
There's a, I don't know, there's a difference. I think there's a difference between effects. I don't really see why you get to be immune to drain magic because you're a permanent effect rather than an effect that lasts until the caster's remaining magic phase. Because, I mean, it does say, what does it say on drain magic? All remains in play spells are immediately dispelled and the effects of all other spells on the target unit immediately come to an end. So, I mean, there's nothing about, but not if it's a permanent duration, or I don't really see the issue with it.
Well, the issue with it is it's you don't, Wither don't end. It's not a remains in play spell, but people argue it is, and on the same vein, they're arguing the terminology of the wording of the spell versus the wording of the Skaven spell. Well, the Skaven spell says when it ends, the game's over. So there you go. It's back up.
So what's the? Yeah, so the effects last for the rest of the game.
You've dispelled it.
So you dispelled
over.
It.
That was my counter argument to someone. On turn one, I shoot your Frost Phoenix, kill it, cast Wither. You dispel it on your turn. One, game's over. I win 11-9.
There is always a nice way. Even I really like that one. I think that's genius. I think you could certainly rules layer that one through. Yeah, the effects last for the rest of the game. So
the game's over.
So yeah, you stop the effects. That's it. Game's over. Nice one.
Yeah, that's my boggle with it. It's that, or I'm going to smash around the head with a rule book.
Just,
do you agree?
Just gotta keep trying to make sure you're ahead. Well, I guess we're playing with Skaven, but we're at that advantage. If you take a big shooting heavy list, blow the crap out of them the first turn with your Warp Lightning Cannons, pick up a few points, get them to dispel Wither. Yeah. You win. Nice one.
Just a couple of miniguns at a unit and plague on something that's small and cast Wither and then have him uncast Wither and it's over.
So on that filthy, definitely Skaven-like ending of Weasley rules lawyering, I think we can probably call it a day there. So don't forget, if you want to ask us any questions or if there's anything you want to say about the show, anything, any feedback you want to give us, you can catch us on theunderempire.net. We'll have a thread up on there. You can catch us on Facebook as Skaven Blight Radio, or we're on Twitter at Skaven Blight Rad.
Yeah, the new website is still under construction, so you're just going to have to be patient because we're not getting paid to do this. So it is very much a matter of getting something that works right and making sure it's user-friendly. And then I've got to make it per user-friendly so Chris can use it as well.
Yeah, you've got to make it idiot-proof. If I can break it, then
I
it's not
idiot-proof.
Didn't want
to say
proof,
that,
so.
Yeah. See, there you go. Yeah, what are you like?
So we'll see you later, guys. Thanks for listening.
All right. Cheers.